Poetry is
an echo, asking a shadow to dance.
The rhythmical creation of beauty in words.
Poetry is
not a turning loose of emotion, but an escape from emotion. It is not the expression of personality, but an escape from personality.
Poetry is what gets lost,
what gets lost in translation.
Poetry is
nearer to vital truth than history.
The language in which man explores his own amazement says heaven and earth in one word. Poetry
is life distilled.
A deal of joy and pain and wonder
with a dash of the dictionary.
Poetry is all that is worth remembering in life.
It's that spark of recognition when someone has voiced exactly what you were thinking, or struck that chord that shakes your bowels. It's when something is so precise it leaves you bereft of words. That moment of revelation before you have a chance to shout Eureka, that moment of clarity is where poetry lives. And today, that's where we'll live. You're listening to the best of public radio from NHPR. I'm Andrew Perella. Poets have had their say on their profession over the years. I've had my say. And before the end of the hour, others will have theirs. We'll hear from New Hampshire's own Donald Hall and Maxine Kuhman. We'll speak with young poets about how they approach the art form and open the newspaper to find an unusual practice. Poetry is written as much for the ear as for the page. It sometimes even loses something in its inky transliteration, a vitality that only resurfaces when spoken aloud. 8 years ago, a new competition was conceived to revitalize oral poetry. Poetry Out Loud is...
It's an elimination poetry tournament, basically, wherein students choose three poems to recite.
That's Daniel Belshaw, New Hampshire's 2013 champ, who will be representing us at Nationals this year. Some 9,000 students from 36 high schools around the state participated, and Belshaw survived the three rounds of competition for the honor. Contestants browsed through a database of thousands of poems for their selection.
I chose a contemporary poem, Lazy, by a guy named David Yezzie. I chose a more philosophical poem called Calmly We Walk Through This April's Day by a famous Jewish poet named Delmore Schwartz. And then I chose this old British staple, Kubla Khan by Samuel Coleridge.
And a lot is riding on which poems you select as a contestant. The first round of competition is in January, which means you have to live with these three poems for 4 months if you make it to Nationals. Of course, understanding the poem isn't the only criteria by which you're judged.
I actually took a lot of time in finding those three poems. I wanted to choose poems that suited me as a person, but also presented a real range. Poems that had different moods, different tempers. I did want to make sure that they were pieces that I had a real emotional attachment to. The second poem I chose, Calmly We Walk Through This April's Day, it's a modernist piece. The language at times can be a little thick. But when I started to really see the poem for what it is, I realized that I was one with this poem. It had incredible themes of passaging of time. I found that very, very powerful. And I thought to myself, well, I have to do this one. And sometimes when you read a poem, the storyteller in you starts to get out of bed. And that was the case with Kubla Khan. It's not necessarily a poem that is where you like it, because it's emotional per se. You know, you had a bad breakup, so you read Kubla Khan. It's a poem that is just gigantic. It's bigger than this world, and every storyteller wants to get into people's heads with the story, and Kubla Khan does that.
And the poem changes over time. Not the text, just your understanding of it. Daniel explains that it's an ever-evolving process.
With the first poem, I'm doing Lazy. I initially did that about a man who is very, very aggravated with his routine. He doesn't like getting out of bed. He doesn't like how there's a woman who laughs a certain way on the subway, a lovable grouch. Then when I kept going with the poem, I kept going through the competition, poem stayed with me, I saw that there was a different way to approach this. I did feel that it could be done in a more whimsical way, to a point where the guy even pitied himself about his situation. And with the other two, you're always thinking about how Coleridge put his words together and what his exact intent was. You're always thinking about that. It's an unfinished process.
National Poetry Month ends later this week, but that doesn't mean we have to shelve the tomes we so recently dusted off.
I still think it is relevant, and I still think it's entertaining, and I still think people should check out and read poetry. I think that it's, in a sense, incredible to be living in an age where people have so many different approaches to poetry and where you can find virtually any approach to the medium.
Daniel Belshaw, New Hampshire's Poetry Out Loud champ. He's at Nationals this week competing for that title. And he's got some game. Before we left the studio, he showed us just how much. Go to the website, nhpr.org, to hear him reciting Coleridge's Kubla Khan. Maxine Cumin's career has spanned over half a century. She's the recipient of the Pulitzer Prize, the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize, and an American Academy and Institute of Arts and Letters Award. Cumin was the poetry consultant for the Library of Congress in the early 80s, and despite traveling away from home to lecture at schools and universities around the country, Cumin has retained close ties with her farmhouse in rural New Hampshire.
I started writing poetry, I think, about as soon as I was literate. You know, I went through a very bad patch, which I've written about, when I was a freshman at Radcliffe in 1942. And Wallace Stegner, who was only a little older than I, was the instructor. And I gave him a sheaf of poems, and they were all sort of lovelorn. I had written them the previous summer, and he handed them back to me, and across the top in red pencil he had written, "Say it with flowers, but for God's sake, don't write any more poems about it." Well, I didn't write another poem for about 7 or 8 years. So it really wasn't until I was married and I was again writing poetry, but in the closet. I wasn't showing it to anybody, not even to him. That went on for a number of years. When I was pregnant with my third child, I found a book called Writing Light Verse by Richard Armour. I think it was for sale for $3.95, and I bought it, and I started writing light verse poems and sending them out, and I made myself a promise that if I hadn't sold anything before this third child was born, I would turn my back on this whole thing. Well, in March, the Christian Science Monitor took a little poem of mine, I don't know, 4 or 6 lines, and I was paid $5, thereby recouping the cost of the book, and it launched me on a cottage industry. I did this until 1957, when a friend of the family put me onto a poetry workshop being taught at the Boston Center for Adult Education. That was the stepping stone to seriously writing poetry. Sometimes I'm referred to as a pastoral poet, which I don't mind. It's all right. I think of myself as pastoral and anti-pastoral combined. But living here, raising horses, and tending a vegetable garden which feeds us all winter, the garden has to be tended every day, just as the horses have to be tended to, but morning, noon, and night. The writing, I think, exerts the same kind of discipline. A day without sitting down at my desk seriously is a day full of guilt. It's just that, I mean, I think of myself as a Jewish Calvinist. You know, salvation through grace, grace through good works, and working is good. Just that simple.
Thanks to Mary Kuchenmeister and Rick Ganley for that window into the mind of Maxine Cumin. Cumin won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1973. This year, another New Hampshire resident claimed the prize, Sharon Olds, for her collection of poems titled Stag's Leap.
On the then below zero day it was on near the patient's chair, the old heater kept by the analyst's couch at the end, like the infant's headstone that was added near the foot of my father's grave. And it was hot with the almost laughing satire of a fire's heat, the little coils like hairs in hell. And it was making a group of sick noises. I wanted the doctor to turn it off, but I couldn't seem to ask, so I just stared, but it did not budge. The doctor turned his heavy, soft palm outward toward me, inviting me to speak. I said, "If you're cold, are you cold? But if it's on for me..." He held his palm out toward me. I tried to ask, but I only muttered. But he said, "Of course," as if I had asked. And he stood up and approached the heater and then stood on one foot and threw himself toward the wall with one hand and with the other hand reached down behind the couch to pull the plug out. I looked away. I had not known he would have to bend like that, and I was so moved that he would act undignified to help me that I cried, not trying to stop, but as if the moans made sentences which bore some human message. If he would cast himself toward the outlet for me, as if bending with me in my old shame and horror, then I would rest in his art, and the heater purred like a creature or the familiar of a creature or the child of a familiar, the father of a child, the spirit of a father, the healing of a spirit, the vision of healing, the heat of vision, the power of heat, the pleasure of power.
The Space Heater by Sharon Olds, read there by Rebecca Lavoie. Congrats again to Sharon, the Pittsfield resident and T.S. Eliot Prize winner, for earning the 2013 Pulitzer Prize for poetry. With that, she joins the ranks of New Hampshire poets who have also taken home the prize: Charles Simic, Maxine Cumin, and of course, Robert Frost, four times. After the break, we'll hear from another vaunted New Hampshire poet, Donald Hall, and how he went without.
Hours, days, weeks, months, weeks, days, hours. The year endures without punctuation. February without ice, winter, sleet. Snow melts and recovers, but nothing. Without thaw, although cold streams hurtle, no snowdrop or crocus rises, no yellow, no bright leaves of maple without autumn.
A Vietnam vet who found solace in poetry, and of course, we'll have some more poems. In the meantime, share your thoughts with us. What's your favorite poem? And don't forget to address the ever-elusive why. Join the discussion on nhpr.org or find us on Facebook. I'm Andrew Perella. You're listening to the best of public radio from NHPR.